If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there are so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code Roll Radio at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv. What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, or whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content that you have come to expect. Today's guest is one of the most decorated competitors in jiu-jitsu. Along with an incredible jiu-jitsu career, she is also an accomplished MMA fighter in the ONE Championship organization. On this episode, Michelle Nicolini discusses her jiu-jitsu journey, training under Robert Drysdale, her triumphant return to jiu-jitsu after a long focus on MMA, and a ton more. Here's the Roll Radio with 8-time IBJJF world champion, 3-time Pan American champion, and 3-time Brazilian national champion, and IBJJF Hall of Fame member, Michelle Nicolini.
Welcome. Roll Radio.
And we are live.
Yeah, here we go.
And another episode of 2023.
Yep.
And we are on the way with another amazing conversation.
I hope so.
Yeah, I just came back from Florida. You know. It's so freaking cold here.
It's I don't know. It was nice having you gone.
Is that what?
Yeah,
it
gets quiet. I can relax a little.
Is that
get
what
some work done?
Oh, yeah. Get some work done or not do any work.
I don't have something in my ear buzzing in my ear every 5 minutes. I can actually do something. I see, and get some stuff done.
I'm appreciated to be around. I see.
I see
how it is.
Yeah.
But listen, this year, especially in this podcast, is unfolding starting quite well.
Yes.
The first guest, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Second guest, not much less of that. I mean, another pioneer of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Michelle, welcome. Thank you for being here. Thank you for hanging out with us and chatting with us. Many consider you as a female pioneer. You've been doing jiu-jitsu for a very, very long time, but a lot of people look up to you. I mean, you've been doing jiu-jitsu way back in the day. Do you feel like you have, you know, established this figure of female jiu-jitsu pioneer?
Hello, guys. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys. First, took me a long time to realize that I was inspiring people, you know, especially like other women that,
yeah.
Because I think that before me, there was other girls. But I think jiu-jitsu was not in the spotlight in that time, you know.
Yeah.
So took me some time to realize I was like inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it's interesting how, at least, you know, like we do jiu-jitsu, we don't think about what other people see. And then we notice through the accomplishments that we've done, you know, people start looking up to you. And it's interesting how our actions impact other people, right?
Yeah, and then I start to get, like, because of internet as well, you know, I start to go, like, to get more messages about people. Sometimes parents message me, my little daughter, she look up at you, you know, stuff like that. And then, oh, maybe, you know, something is, like, changing now. People start to see more BJJ, watch more the girls, the female scenario. So it's pretty cool, you know, to see how this just, like, grows so fast.
Who did you look up to? Who was your female figure?
My female, I think, was Leca Vieira, uh-huh. Diana Lago, Hanete. Hanete was always there. And also Leticia Ribeiro. We end up having a fight later.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, you know, she was there already with Lek, with the other girls before me.
How did it all started for you? I know you started somewhere around 14, 15, right?
No, 17 turning to 18.
Oh,
not
really?
So young. Yeah, not so young for a Brazilian girl. You know, the girls that I used to compete against, they start when they are very little, like 3-4 years old. Mackenzie, like Luana Alzubir, or Kira, Bia Mesquita, they all start really, really young. But back in the days, 20 years ago, I didn't know what it was jiu-jitsu. So I was doing other sports in school, and I start martial arts with capoeira. Mm-hmm. It's a Brazilian kind of martial arts. But I was not, like, so happy because I want to compete. You know, I wasn't the age that I want to prove to myself or prove to others. So I was looking for another martial arts to do, and I thought about judo. That's when I met Drysdale for the first time, and we are friends, and he was living in America already and came into my city because his mother is from my city, my hometown. We met, and then he said, you should do jiu-jitsu instead of judo. Judo is a bit boring. And then I said, what is jiu-jitsu? So I went to a school, not so many school, not so many girls. And then I invited a girl to go with me because I was super shy. And so in the first class, I just love it. You know, when you don't understand nothing, but you felt like that's for you. So I felt like that.
What was that feeling when you step for the very first time, the very first day, you go to that academy, you go to that school, and you step on the mat for the very first time? What is different between jiu-jitsu, capoeira, and then judo, and or anything else that you've done in the past?
You know, jiu-jitsu is, you know, the lifestyle, all the people hang out together, especially here in Brazil. It's a bit different because we make friends for life, you know. And then I went to that small room, all sweating, everybody, you know, a lot of guys. And you do one movement and everybody, yes, very nice. Keep it doing. That's right. And then I feel like you get more motivated. But I didn't have a gi. I just have my, like, regular clothes on. And I think it's the feeling that everybody's mash you, but you understand one thing. And then you want to go back the next day to try this one thing again. Maybe tomorrow I have better chance against that person, you know. And I think that was the feeling that always brought me back to the classes at the beginning.
Did you have a lot of females at that time when you were starting?
No, no, no. I invite a girlfriend to go with me, because there was no other girls. And this was hard, you know, because I was small, and I feel like, and then I had to understand that jiu-jitsu was not only about big sizes, not only for big people, you know. Because I was able to play, at least I thought I was playing with the guys. Like even like a small girl like was.
So being small was a big advantage.
Well, I was just going to say, we had somebody sign up here at the academy last night, who a female who was asking how many women trained here. And I was telling her, you know, we have X amount of women that train here. So many show up to each class. And I asked her if she was going to have, if there would be any issues training with men. And she was like, she said, no, I understand. It's a male dominated sport. And all I could think about was, this is 20, 30 years after certain people that we've talked to, and how different it is, but yet it's still male dominated. And I don't know how we can help grow the female student body.
Do you think there's something we can do?
I think it has been changing a lot. You know, today we see, I personally teach two women's classes in different places every week. And I felt like they really enjoy to train each other, you know, the girls. But back in the days, it was super hard to find this. I was black belt when I found other black belts to train with, female black belts. Took a long time. And I think to help others is like by promoting, by having in your school a safe, a welcome place for women as well. You know, sometimes just like making like a, I don't know, maybe a changing room with flowers. Don't think that can attract more girls, you know. It's like the place, the gym is like, it usually has Muay Thai, has boxing or other things that all male dominate. Mm-hmm. So if you put a flower, if you paint the doors like a pink, you know, just to demonstrate that they are welcome, girls are welcome, you know, they have a space there. It starts maybe to change the scenario of the gym, at the gym.
Yeah, if you walk into our female locker room, it's full of pictures and they've made
it's much different than the male locker room.
The girl locker room is very different than the men locker room. So go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that this makes difference, you know. It's not all the places that is like yours. And I'm like appreciate that you guys take this care. But unfortunately, today they still have a lot of abuse cases that the guys take advantage of, because it's like one or two girls training and they are beautiful and they are, you know, they look hot. And then the guys, they want the girls, you know. It should not be like this as well, you know. I don't think I would like my family training in a place like that, you know. So just think. To be more respectful, you know, the girls are like your partners, you know, not to see the girls like female, like attracted to the others like this as well. I don't know. I think respect shows a lot where is a good place to train or not.
Yeah. And all that, I think, I'm confident all the sources from the culture in that academy, how do we treat each other? You know, we don't look at each other as necessarily as male, female. We look at each other as training partners. You help me, I help you. And the dynamic is very different. But all that starts on top, right? All that starts from the instructors and goes down. Is that, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And my place when I was like a lower belt, I was maybe the only girl training. Because this girl that I invite to go with me, she didn't keep training for like, she never kept training. And then I was in this place for 3 months, and then Robert moved back to Brazil and he started training, teaching in my city. And soon he moved back, I started training with him as a white belt. And then he never gave me one advantage because I was girl, you know, was like even worse for me. He always pushed me too much. Go to the office. We have to talk. If I get in trouble with other guys, you know, I was like very strict with me. Mm-hmm. Never gave me one advantage, but I think this was good because, you know, made me strong at, back in the days, I didn't understand this. I wanna like sometimes feel like I'm a girl, you know. He should be more like I don't know, nicer maybe, but he was very strict. Like, no, not because you are a girl, you have to do this. You don't have a privilege. Okay. But I think that the experience of the teachers, the coaches, you know, also counts a lot.
Well, so let me ask you this. What should be the right approach here, right? Because sometimes from the instructor perspective, especially if they're a male instructor, it's hard to, you know, maneuver through these things. Because one, most females are smaller than men. Like there are. There's a physical difference, right? Two, you guys think differently. You're not right or wrong, but you just think differently, right? Female jiu-jitsu is very different than male jiu-jitsu, you know? So for male instructors, sometimes it's difficult how to help women, how to help female students, you know? Should the instructor be pushing them, or should they kind of let them, you know, have their easier way? What do you think?
Well, I'm talking about my students nowadays. I have like many students, like girls, student, mm-hmm. female. I let them do what I feel they wanted to do. You know, some of them I push a little bit more. Some other girls, they go just for talking, you know. You can feel like, I don't know if the guys, they have this feeling, like when the girl has period, for example, they're more sensitive. So you slow down a little bit, you know, let the girl stay there and do what she wants. I know they're not, for example, my students, they're very respectful. I know they're not going to sit down and take the phone and start talking during the class and things like that. But I kind of feel like when I can push them a little bit more, or if I feel like one or other, say, take your time, do what you want, you know, relax a bit, because it's like hormonal. Some days we are good, we want to be pushed, some others not. But I don't have like the right recipe, you know, just have to pay attention on the signs that the girls always give, you know.
Yeah.
I have one student, she's very emotional. So every month, I cannot say anything to her because she's tight. Not only me, but if someone goes a bit hard, she goes hard. But if someone goes in that day a bit hard, no, again. No, so it's a bit more dramatic, but it goes, and sometimes it's not our fault.
I think it's also I think it's also the goals, though, right? Once you know your students a little bit, you know what their goals are, and you know if they want to compete, well, then they need to be pushed. If they are here just because that's where their friends are, or it's, you know, to get away from the family, that's a different scenario, and you treat them differently.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Knowing your students is very important. When you look back, you were a white belt, blue belt, maybe a purple belt. You were the only girl. What was the hardest thing for you?
I think training with big people, you know, because when you're a student, I was a competitor. Mm-hmm. So I won that time. I just want to win against everybody, except Drysdale, because it was super hard. But the other guys, I want to compete with them. I didn't understand this point that they were strong, or because for me, if they use strength, was not fair. So I got angry all the time when I felt like they used too much strength against a small girl, you know. So nowadays, as I train with lower belts or girls or small people, I also could understand that sometimes it's hard to hold a small girl, for example, because they move a lot, they fast, maybe they don't have the same strength, but you know, they're super fast. So you have to make them stop using a bit more of your power, you know. But back in the days, I didn't know this. So for me, I was comparing myself with the guys all the time. That was hard.
Do you remember one, did you have like a one moment which, you know, made you really frustrated? Like, it just, this is not working. Like, this is hard, you know, and you know why, you know, you, because of the size you mentioned, everybody's stronger than you. But like, was there a point of frustration that really got to you?
Yeah, I have a friend now. He's also black belt. And he started training for us. I think I was already blue belt, and he was just a little kid, like 8 years old. And then, you know, 10, 11, when he was like 14, 15 years old, he was already bigger than I. Not bigger, but stronger. Like, he was turning into a man. And before, I used to train super light with him. I used to win against him all the time. And his name is Bruno. And when he starts to be stronger than I, that was super frustrating for me. I never like accepted that, you know. Many times Robert felt that, and he made me go again with Bruno, go again with Bruno. I said, no way. And then now we super good friends nowadays, like brothers. But there was a time that our relationship was not so good. And there was one time as well that Robert made me go to the office, to his office, to, you know, and he suspended me because we have all pairs, you know. And then he said, Michelle, who you go with? I don't have someone. And then he said, you go with Bahia. Bahia was super strong guy, and I think he was white belt, you know, and it was brown belt. And he said, "You go with Bahia." No, I don't go with Bahia. Not today. I'm like, I don't go with Bahia. I was 53 kilos as 113 kilos. Mm-hmm. For my whole life, I was this until 2010. And then, no, you go with Bahia. No, I don't go. And then we start to have a discussion at the on the mat. And I said, okay, you go out. 2 weeks suspended. Because I didn't go.
So he was tough.
So what did you think about that? You leave the gym, you got suspended. What's going in your mind?
I was pissed, you know, super angry. And I was working at the gym, so I have to see the gym. So I have to see all the people every day. And then he didn't allow me to.
Did everybody know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, because he did it on the mat, right? Yeah. Yeah. Of course they did.
So what was your first time that you competed? Do you remember that day?
Yes. Before training with Joyce. So I was still training in that club for 3 months. And then there's, I was so excited to compete because I was looking for that in capoeira. And then I moved to jiu-jitsu, and the coach said, there's a competition that like 2 weeks later after I start. Okay, I do it. So I lost. Then they was a small competition in my city. And then he put on two other like internal competition just for the team. I try again, and I lost. I lost all the three competitions I did at the beginning. And then I said, that was fun, but I think competitions are not for me. And then I decided to not compete my whole life again. A few months later, I moved training with Drysdale. And I told him, no, I'm going to train, but I don't want to compete again. Because, you know, I got frustrated. Competition's not for me. And then, yeah. Then I... After talk, after training a lot, you know, and then he started like talking and motivate me to compete again. And then one day I decided to go.
So what was the first competition after that break? What was the first competition again?
There was a small competition in near to our city. Because in Brazil, we have competition every weekend. If you have money to afford, you can compete every weekend. Since the white belt, I think we compete most of the weekends, from white to blue belt, you know. When I got purple, then there was more space because there was not so many purple belts. Mm-hmm. But white and blue, I could compete every weekend, almost every weekend.
So what was going in your mind the first competition after the break? Like you stepping onto the mat, you had this break, there were concerns over there, Robert, you know, convinces you to go again, what's in your mind?
I think I thought like, I'm training with better people. I felt like ready, you know, I understood a bit. Because let's be honest, like 2-3 weeks of training is not enough, you know. That was like, not sure that I could do good, you know, maybe by luck. But so after that, I said, maybe now it's time for me. I feel ready, you know, I have training a lot and spend more time at the gym. So I think my mind was like a little better after that break.
And how did it go?
Then I won. And after I won that one, I start to win everything. Like, just win. And then, you know, it keeps you motivated. Yeah. I won a lot. White belt and blue belt, I won, I think, everything.
So what's more important, winning or losing?
Nobody likes to lose, right? But nobody. It's so important, you know. Yeah. When I win, I won. I go back to the gym and, you know, nothing to talk or anything. If you lose, then Robert was a pain in the ass again.
Sensing a theme.
So every competition was a big license for us, you know. If not only if I don't lose, other people at the gym, they lose. So we always like to keep studying, keep training. On that mistake, what happened with, you know. So I think losing always give you better lessons.
What was Robert telling you that was he was such a pain in the ass? What was his message after you losing?
You expose too much your arms. You have to learn to pass guard, something like that, because I didn't like to pass guard, you know. Mm-hmm. I just like to be on bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like the same. You have to learn one takedown at least. You have to learn how to pass guard. But I was just a white belt, you know.
Was it always technical advice or was it sometimes about your mindset?
No, I don't remember exactly, but I think most like technical.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering, with all that being said, you're winning a lot, you know, Robert, it's hard on you when you don't win. What was the best success for you? Do you have one match that it was just in your mind that you were so proud of?
I think there was many competitions in the Y, and let's say blue belts that have like one or two girls that we always end up in the finals, you know, me and this one other girls. And the finals were like always on fighter. And then I went to my first Worlds was in 2002, and I just had to be promoted to the blue belt. The first world, and then I decided that I go because I think I got promoted in May because it was our like kind of national. Mm-hmm. And then I 1 month later was the world, so I decided to go, but then I lost. I was super nervous and I lost in the first, I think first or second fight. The next year I went back to as a blue belt, and then I won the Worlds. I think every time when I won the Worlds was like a special for me, you know, because when you train jiu-jitsu, you just want to be world champion. World champion, I want to be world champion. You don't know how it's going to be after, you know, people imagine their life is going to change. So as a blue belt, I said, I want to be world champion. And then because Robert was already world champion, so I want to be like him. I want to copy him in everything. And then, I think when I won the Worlds as a blue belt was very special.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that final match? That moment when you learned, you found out that you are the winner. You are the world champion. You achieved your goal.
Yeah, that was, I think I had three fights. That was in Rio de Janeiro. I had three fights in the final, won by Chungo. And but I think I was like a very dominating the whole three fights. You see, I felt super good that competition, and I felt like, you know, that was very good.
So besides your jiu-jitsu success, you venture into mixed martial arts. You step into the ring in a cage and you put gloves on and you try that. Why trying MMA? Why was that important to you versus continuing with pure jiu-jitsu?
I love jiu-jitsu. That's no doubt. But, you know, when you're doing one thing for, I like challenge. That's why I started to do this, because I want to challenge myself. So when I split from Drive, I moved back to Brazil in 2009. And then I was training in São Paulo. And 2010, I got the first invitation for MMA. That was right after the world. So I went back from US to Brazil. And someone messaged Cavaca, that was my coach at that time. And he said, if you have a girl that would like to fight MMA in Peru, there was a fight coming next, like 2 weeks. And then Cavaca passed the message to me. So, okay, why not? Doing nothing. Let's go. So I didn't worry about the money they would pay. I didn't worry if it was pro or not, the weight. I just said, okay, I go. And I have never trained Muay Thai or anything else. And I didn't like takedowns before. After a fight, I won the fight, you know, that was in Peru. And then I felt like, wow, I like that. But for many years, jiu-jitsu was like the priority, because pays my bills, man. So I couldn't stop training jiu-jitsu and focus on the MMA, because I have my bills. And then I keep training jiu-jitsu. In the between, I compete, and then if I have a break, I was doing some of Muay Thai. I start to pay attention more on the takedowns, on the wrestling. That was not so common in Brazil. We don't have wrestlers here. Very few nowadays. So I start training more in the between the big competitions. In 2011, I did my second MMA. But never professional. I have to do the people at the gym, they try to help me with the MMA training. But it was not a specific training. It was not a specific gym for MMA. In 2014, I think I have two MMA fights. But the same, you know, jiu-jitsu still paying my bills. In 2016, I was doing a seminar tour in Asia. And then I was dreaming, you know, I want to stop jiu-jitsu. It's a bit late already for me. And for me, it was like, even like I was going in the finals in the world, and I was like, okay, let's go one more. You know, it was a little bit like this. The girls that was coming, they were like 10 years younger than I. Like Mackenzie was on fire. Tommy was messy, you know, they are like, they want to win the world as I want before. So I feel like I lose a bit of this fire. And during this tour in Asia in 2016, I went to Evolve MMA and Chatri in the last day of training there. I was there for 1 week. And then in the last day, he came to me and he said, oh, I have a proposal to you. I want to give you the contract for one championship. I want you to move to here and live and train here in Singapore. And so, wow. And, you know, they would, he offered me like a good salary so I could do this move to MMA in a like a safe way for me in that time. So I was there, and that was excellent for me, because as I never had like much time to focus on the stand-up game, on the Muay Thai or boxing or whatever. So I stayed there for 2 years and we trained in Muay Thai every single day, every single day. So it's like I was the best that I could imagine in that time, you know.
Do you feel like you are starting from the beginning? Because obviously you are an expert in jiu-jitsu. Like, this is what you do, right? But biking, boxing, Muay Thai, wrestling, you know, even just mixing them and MMA itself is like almost a different sport, right? The rules are different. Did you feel like you were starting from the very beginning, like almost from the white belt?
I feel like I did at the very beginning because, as I said before, in 2016, I already knew how to pass guard, how to play on top, but still my passion is still was to play guard.
Yeah.
So for me, maybe I have to adapt, I have to change a bit of my gaming because I was a guard lover, you know. So I had to learn the stand-up, takedowns that I knew feel. But I didn't like connect with the stand up, you know, how you're going to approach to the person, how you're going to escape from a punch and do a takedown, stuff like that. So I had to learn the very, very basic things.
So let me ask you this. A lot of students, you know, they, as they go through white, blue, purple, especially purple and up, they develop a style. They like things, they don't like things and so on, right? And then it's very hard for many students to learn the other things that they don't like. So like, let's just say somebody is a guard player. They do not like takedowns. They don't. They don't learn takedowns at all. They ignore them for years and years and years. And then as you get, you know, purple, brown, even black belt, some don't even want to touch them. But they have to. They have to. We need to know that stuff, right? What advice do you give students to train the things that they don't like, the things that they are not good at? This is so, so hard for many.
Yeah, you know, now, because I went to this, you know, this happens to me as well, because I just ignore takedowns for almost my whole life in BJJ. And nowadays, when I teach the girls, when I teach seminars, I always show something from the stand-up. Because it's super hard if you just block, if you say to yourself, I don't like takedowns, I don't need to play takedowns, I don't need to learn anything from the top, you know, because you had to, you know, one day you're going to find yourself in that situation. For example, if you want to try ADCC, for example, you really needed to learn how to play on top, you know, how to play from your feet. So it's very important. Don't just block, you know. There is thousands of takedowns. One or other, you may like it. So try, keep trying at least once a week. Try something different. For me, I was like this, especially for passing guard. And drives a while, we say like, you have to pass to the opposite side where people are weak, defending guard. So nowadays, my best size to pass guard is from the left when people don't know how to defend so well. So I think I'm just like very grateful because I had like a coach that I was pushing myself to like the very limit. And I try to teach my students like over a little bit of everything.
You said that Robert was pushing you almost to the limits. Have you ever felt that point where you want to quit? You were like, done, this is too much for me?
Oh, for sure, many times. And not only Dreiser, but I think as much as you give in training, more they want, you know? So you train hard, like for the Worlds, for ADCC, so the coach always think they can push you a bit more, you know? That's good.
That's good. I agree. That's good. Challenge is good, right? Challenge makes us do more things. Gary always says, we can do hard things.
You can do hard things.
You can do hard things.
So you took a long time off from BJJ competition and then just went back recently and did really, really well. What was it like? We talked about stepping on the mats for the first time as a teenager. What was it like going back after that break?
Going back as a master too was so fun, you know, and nowadays my mind is different than it was before. Mm-hmm. I always like receive message from people that I would like to see you competing again. I never had a chance to compete, like to watch you competing in Rio. And then, I don't know, was just fun for me. I don't know if I win or if I'm going to lose, but it's just like my mind is different now. You know, I want to give the people the chance to fight, to do a good fight, you know. I always like it. Trying my best, but I think at this we can keep like motivate more and more goals.
If you look at your mind right now today, like after the Rome competition, after the Europeans, and your mind 20 years ago when you were the white belt and you were saying, I want to win everything, I want to compete, I want to win, what's the biggest difference between 20 years ago and today?
Like I said before, jiu-jitsu was my work. I felt like I had to win to get sponsored, to get to open the doors for like seminars, for classes, to help my team. But now it's different. I'm already building my way, so I go more like for fun. I still like, I think I don't want to lose as well, but I really enjoy more like nowadays that I don't put myself too much pressure, you know, I don't at all. I think I just, before, because I train, I spend the whole day training. I feel like I have to win. And now it's different. I don't know. I just feel like this pressure went out, you know.
What do you tell your students if they put so much pressure on themselves, especially females? Like, what do you tell them to not to put that pressure, to enjoy it more?
In 2007, I won the world's first year in US. My weight as of 115 in the open class for the first time. And so 2007 was, I think, Michelle, Nicoline, everywhere, you know. 2008, I put myself so much pressure that I couldn't barely make my weight for the awards. I didn't make weight. I think I got just to compete the open class because the pressure in my mind, there was like everybody wants to see me winning again. You know, they expect me to win. And that made me so bad, you know. I was like down of energy. I didn't want to train. I felt like I don't want to do because of other people. But everything was mental. And that was the worst year for me. Also, we had moved to US and that was like in that adaptation, you know. Young, very young. So nowadays when I... when some of my students say, I want to compete, go and have fun. Later, in a few years, you're going to decide if this is what you want or not, or if you're doing for, like, have some more adrenaline or something. But for now, you just should go, try your best, but no pressure, you know. Like, I encourage them to compete. I think everyone should compete at least once or twice or three. You know, but competition make you like strong inside of you, you know, because only people that has competing knows all the feelings that they can manage inside them, you know. It's like a stomach, butterflies, you know, or I don't know, you cannot sleep the night before, the night before, stuff like that, you know. Everything you eat, you feel bad. So you must compete to understand your feelings, this emotion.
What's worse for you, the day before competition or the day off, like few minutes before you go in?
I have no problem.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I learned how to deal with this. Even like when I have to make weight for MMA, for example, I'm super good, like cut or stay without food. I can stay long time. So I'm not, like, you can ask my coach now. He always like say, like, yeah, I'm easy with. Also, I sleep very well. But I have like hard time. I think the night before, if I'm in the final next day, maybe that would be worse for me.
Yeah, that's the hard one. Yeah.
To sleep, you feel like, oh, tomorrow at this time I'll be fighting, you know, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always interesting how the big moment coming up, right? That's where our mind is going. There's a lot going on in there.
For MMA or jiu-jitsu, that Sunday, I remember, like, I really enjoy the moment I'm about to step on the mat or on the cage because I feel like you're ready. I have done everything. And that is so amazing for me. I can sing, I can go, I can smile, you know. It's the moment I have, like, oh, finally. Because when you do, like, a tough camp, for example, like 2-3 months, you just want the day of the fight to come soon, you know, like, praying for that day. And I really like the 5 minutes or, like, on the day that you step on the mat.
That's the best one, huh?
Yes.
You competed everywhere. I mean, you competed in the U.S. a lot, but you competed in Portugal, in Italy, you know, obviously in Brazil. You train, do seminars everywhere. Where is the place that sticks out the most? Where's your favorite place for jiu-jitsu? Is it Europe? Is it U.S.? Is it Brazil? Come on, tell us.
I cannot say this. People always ask, oh, where would you? I don't have my own school. And they always ask, where when I open your school? Where's your favorite? But I cannot say this. You know, I really like all the places that I have been. Some places is not for me, like, to live. But I'm very lucky that I always like it. I think I've been in the best places. And I don't know, competitions everywhere. I don't have any bad memories about places, you know. I really enjoy the people that it's good to be hosted by someone, you know, because they take me to, like, nice restaurants, nice places to visit. It's, like, just amazing, all the places. Very lucky.
So are you opening your own academy?
That's my next question.
You brought that up.
Yeah. I was expecting to have something maybe this year or later next year.
Oh, good for you. That's nice. Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. That's good for you. It's always good. For me, it's always good to see somebody who's accomplished so much and made such a huge impact on people in jiu-jitsu to have their own place. You know, I think that's not only accomplishment, but also, like, you can make it your own. And I think that is important. You can really create your own place, your own culture around it. And, you know, I hope you do. I hope you do. I wish you the best of luck there.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Listen, we've almost an hour. Almost an hour. But before we wrap this up, what we do at the end of every episode, our previous guest asked a question, and he didn't know that you will be answering that question. So it was kind of a surprise for him, right? So Gary is going to ask you the question. Let's see where this is going to go.
Yeah, so this is from Nick Albin. This is Chewy's question. And he wants Nick Albin, Chewy?
Chewy.
He's Jiu-Jitsu?
On YouTube, yeah.
He wants to know, what benefits does new school jiu-jitsu have over old school jiu-jitsu and vice versa?
So. First of all, before you answer, are you old school jiu-jitsu or are you new school jiu-jitsu? Old school. That's right.
Look at her. She's frowning at you when she said that.
I'm old school.
I'm just old.
I like old school jiu-jitsu. Anyway.
I'm an old school jiu-jitsu that we play lapel guard. We play a kind of berimbolo like 10, 15 years ago, but that was not named as today in the year. Other day I was watching some Leozinho Vieira like old videos or something. And he was already playing this. I remember in 2009, I played a lot lapel guard.
Yeah.
And it was annoying at the time. And my friends in the club, they didn't like it. But then I think I stopped it to play that lapel guard. But I consider I'm totally like old school. I think the new generation or the new school is very... it's a compliment, né, to the old school jiu-jitsu. They came to, and I think it's very important. The new generation now is creating new things, you know, that make us keep in the studying, keep working a lot in jiu-jitsu. We cannot stop in any kind of profession. You cannot stop training or studying, you know. And I think one always going to complement the other, you know. There is not better or worse, you know, or good ones. Just like, and I don't play too much, for example, berimbolo, but I have to know that, you know, to defend or to teach my students, you know. But for sure, I teach first the techniques that I use most. And then we go like slowly, we go to the others. But I really enjoy some like good new players with this new movements nowadays. And they are very precise with the techniques. Né? They do the same, and it's always good. I enjoy to watch as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like I when I look at jiu-jitsu, it's like almost like waves. Things come and then they disappear, and then somebody else years later brings them up. And you even talked about like playing lapel guard way back in mid 2000s. You know, it was I don't know. Do you think that jiu-jitsu has like new things, or is it just the old things that come back?
I think the old things that come back, and they have like, they add more details, they add more movements, you know. This make everything looks new. But I think we had the movements before. We had, Elio Gracie had the movements before, and we didn't know so many, you know. And then we keep like training, you keep creating, developing, you know, one by one or small things every time. And then you create this lack of jiu-jitsu, this bunch of techniques.
I love it. Michelle, before we finish this up, before we wrap this up, if anybody wants to connect with you, you know, if anybody wants to, you know, connect with you and chat with you, are you on website, social media? Where can people find you?
If they want to train with me, I'm training at Damian's Maia Place in São Paulo, Brazil. Everybody's welcome to stop by if you're in Brazil. Next month, I'm going to have a women's camp, 2 days camp in Santos, São Paulo as well. Only for girls is the sixth year that I'm doing this camp, open only for girls all over the world. Everybody's welcome. Then I go to Europe for 3 weeks, 2 weeks, Austria, then I go German and Sweden. So can join any of my seminars. I'm posting on my social media all the time. My Instagram is open. Can check it out. Can message me. And I always answer people.
Well, and we'll make sure to post the links in the notes of this on this episode. So if you guys want to connect with Michelle and perhaps take advantage of some of the camps or seminars that she does all around the world, I mean, feel free to do that. I'm sure it would be phenomenal. So 6 years, huh? 6 years.
Wow. Yes.
Good for you. Good for you. I couldn't. I was struggling with fingers.
You can't even count on his fingers. Look at that.
That's phenomenal. Good for you. That's awesome. All right.
What? What is this here on top of your table?
This?
Yeah.
that's me. That's me.
That's his little bobblehead.
Hold on, I'm going to come closer so you can see it.
Oh my God. Super fun. Someone gave you?
Yeah, I got it from my students. I think it was for my birthday.
It was for your birthday.
They made a little bobbly head, and Gary makes fun of me.
It looks just like you, only younger,
only younger, without the gray hair.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Well, Michelle, thank you for being here. Thank you for spending last hour with us, chatting with us and sharing your story. What amazing story. Very inspirational. And the impact you make on jiu-jitsu, particularly on female jiu-jitsu, well, it's greatly appreciated. And I hope that within the next year, we'll see Michelle Nicolini Jiu-Jitsu Academy somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you guys for insist with me, you know. That was a pleasure to be here and talking. That was super light chat. Thank you for making me feel like home.
Wow, beautiful. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, are we all done?
Yeah, it's all done. Right. Let's wrap this up.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.